So we're continuing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu classes, 2007, discussing about sadhana bhakti, and what is not sadhana bhakti. So it actually goes on a long time. For 28 verses, Rupa Goswami is going to prove the point that pure devotees that are absorbed in Krishna's seva, they don't want moksha, even if it's offered to them. They're so satisfied with devotional service that they don't want moksha even if it's offered to them. That's what this section is discussing about. This is one of the qualities of sadhana bhakti or vaidhi bhakti. Yesterday's verse we read from Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 25, verse 36. And Jiva Goswami is saying that this verse from Bhagavatam is showing how bhakti, which is based on love for the Lord, attracts the senses and mind of one who has no desire for mukti. In other words, it's hard to be attracted to one thing if you're already attracted to another thing. So if we're thinking, oh, I want mukti, in other words, Prabhupada often said, it's hard to go to the west if you're going traveling to the east. So if we give up bhakti is based on the principle of attraction. Service is based on attraction. We become attracted to Krishna, our senses and mind, and then we want to serve him because he's so beautiful and so sweet. It's a natural impulse of the soul. The soul is made of service tendency. But if we're harboring some personal desire, in this case, liberation, then that attractive quality of the Lord will not be revealed to us. He'll withhold it. But when we cast aside all their desires for mukti or bhukti, then the Lord reveals his sweetness. And then upon attaining that or receiving that sweetness of the Lord, then we look at the other things and we spit at it. You hear great acharyas. Yamunacharya, he says, when I think of my previous sense gratification, before he had became attracted to the Lord, he said, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought of material sense gratification. Because there's so much happiness from serving the Lord. So Jiva Goswami is saying in his commentary that the limbs of the form, transcendental form of the Lord, they attract the senses of such a person who does not desire moksha. What that really means is, that's the Bhagavatam verse, is that love for the form of the Lord infuses bhakti in such a person. Persons who are thus attracted by the soul-attracting and incomparable charms of the Lord possess all forms of mukti with ease, without their asking. Because the Lord is Muktinath, he's Mukunda, he who gives mukti or liberation. So we're not approaching him for liberation. We're not approaching Mukunda for liberation, we're approaching him for seva, out of love, out of attraction. Attraction, seva. And then liberation is automatically included because we go wherever he goes. If he manifests in the material world, then we'll be there serving him. If he pulls us or invites us to the spiritual world by invitation, then we'll go there, we'll serve him, here or there. That's why that often happens to devotees when they're leaving the body. They realize that, what's the fear? I'm serving Krishna here, and I start a little late in this life. I was a late bloomer, as they say. I was sleeping for 20 years, 24 years, 31 years. Then I woke up to my service, and once I woke up, it was basically blissful. Any nishtha bhakta, any devotee situated in steadiness, he feels a happiness from serving Krishna. So that same happiness, that same steadiness will be guaranteed in next life, but from the start. So then what? It's okay, I'm going. It's like Prahlad Maharaj, when his father threw him off the cliff, or rather his father's henchmen, Hiranyakashipu's henchmen, they were appointed to kill Prahlad in various ways, throwing him under the feet of raging elephants, throwing him off of mountain cliff. And so when Prahlad Maharaj, this is told in Hari Bhakti Sutodaya, when he was thrown off the cliff, he was simply remembering the Lord. And what he was meditating on is that I'm just a baby sitting and relaxing in the lap of my mother. Like a baby's lying upside down in the lap of his mother, maybe clutching her breast, taking some milk, or kicking his legs in between slurps, so to speak, in between his drinking. He doesn't have any fear. He feels quite relaxed, quite protected. And he was just floating through the air like that, backside down, like a baby, kicking his legs up for a lot, as he's coming down the mountain, off the mountain cliff. And then it said when he landed, the Lord arranged, it was basically the Lord caught him, but he made an arrangement. He put like 100 feet of cotton balls on the bottom of the valley, like cotton 100 feet thick. So when Prahlad was thrown off the cliff, no one could see. The demons couldn't see. They only saw jagged rocks and sharp rocks and boulders in the bottom of the cliff, the ravine, as they say, in the valley. And then that's what they saw. But Lord Vishnu had actually done, he just put all kinds of cotton there. So he felt, or at least he felt like that. He was just, oh, nice. So this is when the devotee, at leaving his body, feels like he's just jumping off into the hands of the Lord. Many devotees, when they die, they're very blissful, actually. They're happy. They're not like non-devotees. They have no idea from where they are going. Vishnu Chakravarti points out that it is only when one is intensely drawn or attracted to the Lord by his charm and beauty that one develops a strong apathy for moksha or Brahma Sayujya. On the other hand, the exceedingly beautiful limbs of the Lord, his maddening smile, his forcefully attractive looks, charming voice, and ever new sports steal away the heart and soul of the devotee. To such a blessed devotee, the four values of human life, dharma, art, kama, and moksha, none of the four values is difficult to attain. Indeed, he doesn't want any of them. So it's kind of like the higher taste principle, pramjasva nivartate. Once you have something wonderful, then you have no attraction, apathy. Apathy means no interest, no attraction, no concern for a lesser thing. If you get married and your wife is a very excellent cook, and before that you were in college or working in some job, eating in cafes and hotels and roadside stands, and then you get married and your wife maybe has some Thakur deity in your house, Vaishnav house, and your wife is preparing very clean and careful and tasty and balanced meals for the pleasure of the Gar Thakur family deity, and then you honor that prasadam, you feel so much happiness in your senses. And someone says, oh, you'd like to go back to the hotel and the canteen and the alu tiki, what is that called? The alu tiki wala on the street. Then you'll say, no thanks, because you've experienced something more deep, more satisfying, fulfilling. So the devotee has that same experience, also in prasadam. Oftentimes devotees, somehow or other, circumstances force them to go home. And they go home and they have to eat non-devotee food or whatever their parents serve them, or maybe they even cook. And they say, oh boy, when I was so much looking forward to getting prasadam, get back to the temple and have Krishna prasadam. I never realized that temple food was so good until I didn't have it. I was on the road, I was traveling on the road in Sankirtan, eating out of, you know, dried fruit and yogurt and for 2 months, and then when I got back, then I really appreciated rice and dal. So Vishnath is saying that this is, Krishna steals away the heart. Sri Krishna Charanam Boja Seva Nivritta Chetasam Esham Moksha Bhaktanam Nakadachit Sprihavavit. This is text 25 in the Sadhana This first division, first wave. The devotees whose mind is completely absorbed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna, they never desire moksha, which means destroying themselves by merging in Brahman, at least that type of moksha. And Mukunda Das Goswami, it's a famous Vaishnava commentator, he says that this tranquil bliss is, as one devotee said, he said that merging in Brahman is like eternal slumber, sleeping forever. There's a certain bliss in sleeping, but it's not very active. So here it's called tranquil bliss. Just Prabhupada used the analogy is that you may be in an ocean liner on the ocean, and the boat crashes and you're stuck in a life raft. And just you and you're floating along the life raft, nobody but you. And for the first few days you think, oh, this is so nice. It's so quiet. It's so peaceful. I have some little survival food to eat. And after about 3 or 4 days, you say, oh, it's so boring. There's no one to talk to. There's no variety. So he says that Brahman is like that. At first it seems like something, but then it loses its appeal. So he's saying here that the bliss of impersonal Brahman spontaneously vanishes from the hearts of pure devotees who have once experienced a supreme delight in bhakti. When Rupa Goswami states that a pure devotee never desires moksha, it means that such a devotee shall discard Sayuja Mukti or Mukti, even if it's offered by the Lord Himself. So this is the basic point that he wants to make here for the next 28 verses, is that the devotee, he's experiencing so much satisfaction or happiness from rendering pure devotional service, that even if someone offers him mukti or moksha, he says no thanks. And somehow to make this point and make it clear, Rupa Goswami feels a necessity to speak for 28 verses. Apparently, he wants to drive the point home. It's like saying, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. Don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. So apparently this is the analysis of sadhana bhakti, and he's trying to remove those impediments from the heart which prevent one, a sadhaka, a devotee, they actually prevent one from practicing or rendering pure devotional service. So these are real contending enemies that we might say, oh, I don't have any interest in that, or I don't have to worry about that. But apparently we do have to worry about it, or at least consider it, how much of these type of feelings or moods are mixed in our hearts and our minds. Although we often give ourselves a rather high, we usually rate ourselves very highly. We usually give a very high assessment of ourselves. Oh yes, I'm actually very advanced. I'm actually very fixed up. And I don't have any interest in moksha or sense gratification. I'm quite a unique individual. So I can just skip ahead. I can skip a few classes in college and go right to the last class. But not only does he write 28 verses on this point, that a pure devotee is so satisfied with serving the Lord that he will not even accept moksha, even if it's offered to him. But not only does he make these verses, but then Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath, Mukunda Das Goswami and a whole slew of others write commentaries, extensive commentaries. For who? Is it for the college professors of Indology or Hinduism or Gaudiya Vaishnavism to give them something to do in their college courses? To pour over these fine points of Gaudiya Siddhanta. It's actually for us. Prabhupada often said that this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is actually a handbook for devotion. They called it the devotional handbook, handbook of devotion. I hadn't read it, but people have said, they attribute Prabhupada as saying that if anyone wants to be a devotee, he should read Nectar of Devotion when he college professors of Indology or Hinduism or Gaudiya Vaishnavism to give them something to do in their college courses, to pour over these fine points of Gaudiya Siddhanta. It's actually for us. Prabhupada often said that This Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is actually a handbook for devotion. They called it the Devotional Handbook, Handbook of Devotion. I hadn't read it, but people have said, they attribute Prabhupada as saying that if anyone wants to be a devotee, he should read Nectar of Devotion, what he called Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he should read it 7 times. Whereas by the time you finish it 7 times, you've probably been around about 10 years. And rendered a lot of service, and surrendered a lot, and chanted a lot, and associated with a lot of devotees. And the accumulative effect of all those good things probably turned you into a devotee, even against your wishes. Because it's not easy, not a quick book to read. So now he starts his defense of the point. So many examples from Bhagavatam, this devotee, this person, that person, offered so many opportunities for liberation. They said, no thanks. Everything's quite all right. So he analyzes this from different points, and that's what we want to try to understand. What are the points? First is a verse from 3rd Canto, chapter 4, verse 15, where Uddhava is saying to Krishna, O Lord of Lords, which of the four values of life, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, can ever be difficult to attain for devotees who are absorbed in the service of your beautiful lotus feet? They can have them very easily, even without asking. But your humble servant doesn't want any of these four values if they will mean that he has to stop serving your feet. So someone says, all right, devotee, Krishna Das, you can have moksha, but you have to give up your service to Krishna's feet. Oh no, that's okay. Huh? You keep it. You keep your moksha. I'll keep the feet. And then he quotes a verse in chapter 25, third canto, verse 34. This is Devahuti and Kapila. Kapila addresses his mother. Mother, those that are constantly engaged in the service of my beautiful lotus feet with all their senses, and who are always thirsty for relishing the unlimited beauty and unsurpassable elegance of my form, those who relish, and those who relish mutually discussing or discoursing on my unlimited pastimes, they never desire to be one with me. They do not want moksha. So Jiva Goswami points out here that one with me means oneness with both Brahman, the impersonal aspect, and Bhagavan, the personal Lord. So oneness with the personal Lord means to have Sarupya Mukti, or even basically Sarupya Mukti, and then oneness with the Brahman, of course, is Suyuja. So then he says, Vishnu Chakravarti points out that Kapila Dev, who is a Vishnu avatar, is telling his mother that a real bhakta does not want oneness with me. And then he says, oneness means identity with Brahman. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti raises a question. So, let's see if we can answer the question. Why is it that a devotee discards Brahmananda, which is the blissfulness of merging itself in Brahman? So, this is a pretty good proposal. It's not a bad idea. Always in eternal bliss. Surrounded by bliss at every moment. It's not a bad idea, considering where we are and what that's all about. So then Vishnu, he says, what is there in bhakti that's lacking in Brahmananda? And what is it about bhakti that makes Brahman Sayujya look insignificant? Have any ideas? Well, here's the answer. Lord Kapila says, my devotees are intensely attached to me and are concerned in my service alone by means of all their senses according to the directions of the scriptures. In other words, the Vaidhi Sadakas, they're attached to Krishna's service and they're serving him with all their senses according to Shastric rules. Here, the Supreme Lord is established as the supreme object of bhakti, and the essential nature and functioning of the senses engaged in a service. It means non-mixture of karma gyan yoga with bhakti, according to the injunctions of the scriptures, and the uninterrupted normal nature of bhakti have also been established. We're saying that actual proper bhakti is free from any mixture of gyan or karma, and simply one is dutifully following the scriptural rules with great faith. This is the Vaidhi Sadaka. And then he says, besides, the only aspiration of these devotees is to relish the beauty and grace of the person of the Supreme Lord Krishna. And such pastimes as holding Govardhan Hill with his little finger. Thus the bliss of joy that is in the service of the beautiful feet of the Lord, the bliss of drinking the nectar of the beauty and grace of the person of the Lord, and the bliss of tasting the wondrous pastimes of the Lord, all these three aspects of the transcendental bliss or delight are lacking in Brahmananda. And this is the reason why a devotee discards Brahmananda. So this is why Vishnu Chakravarti is saying that the pure devotees are indifferent. They're indifferent to Brahman. They don't have any care. Why? Because they're relishing the, as I said, Paramjasva Nivardate. Three types of bliss. What are the three? First is the bliss of serving Krishna, the bliss of seeing him, and the bliss of remembering his leelas. So now we have to ask another question on behalf of Vishwanath. Are we experiencing the bliss of seeing the Lord, of remembering his leelas, or of serving him? And that you have to answer yourself. Otherwise, someone may come along tomorrow and offer you Brahman Sayuja, and you might say, sounds pretty good. I'll take it. So the conclusion of this verse is the devotee wants nothing but bhakti, and he never wants to merge or mukti. As I said, he's getting a better better experience. And these are three things that are absent. This is the whole idea. And this mukti, which Jiva Goswami says can include Vaishnava mukti, becoming one with the Lord, means the Lord's form, that's Vaishnava mukti, or becoming one with his effulgence, is Brahma Sayuja or Gyan mukti, is Kaivalya. Either one of these types of oneness, there's three things missing. The bliss of serving the Lord is not there because there's no service. And the bliss of seeing the Lord and relishing his beautiful darshan is missing because you are the Lord. You have the same form. So how will you? It's like getting. How will you get bliss at looking someone else if they look the same as your mirror? You look in the mirror and see yourself, and look at someone else. There's no difference, unless you get a magnifying glass out and go up to the person about an inch away and you say, "Oh, I see. You're different from me. You have a few hairs on your chest." A few golden hairs and Srivat's mark. I don't have that. Oh, anyway, but other than that, I look as daring and dashing as you do. So the bliss of seeing the darshan of the Lord's form, and then the bliss of remembering his leelas. Because, of course, in Brahman there's no leelas. And if you're in Vaikuntha, there are not many exciting leelas. Vishwanath mentions that and he mentions specifically the leela of the Lord, of Giridhari, Krishna lifting up the Govardhan Hill with his pinky finger at the age of 7 for 1 week. This is very charming and amazing to the mind and heart. And Vishwanath just flipping his chakra around here and there, and you're not doing anything very significant or very charming or attractive. It's expected that he'll do grand things, so somehow they don't captivate the mind. The next verse is 28. Samipya Sharsti, he says, Salokya Sharsti Samipya Sarupyai Kat Vamat Yuta Diyamanam Tigrinanti Vina Matsevanam Jana. Lord Kapila further tells in Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 29:13, Mother, my genuine devotees, besides serving me alone for my delight, do not accept Salokya Mukti, liberation, in the sense of living together with me in my own realm. So one by one, it appears in this development of this argument. Rupa Goswami is explaining they don't want Sayuja Mukti, and he won this. They don't want Salokya, and he's giving In other words, there's five different types of mukti. So verse by verse, he's eliminating each one of them by using Bhagavatam verses to show these points. So the genuine devotees, all they want to do is serve me alone for my pleasure. They don't accept Salokya Mukti. That means going back home, back to Godhead. Liberation, the sense of living together with me in my realm. And they don't want Sharsti or Sarshti Mukti, which means liberation, the sense of possessing some of the majesties and powers equal to mine. Now, Sharsti means the Lord's opulence. But sometimes, in other words, the Lord has a big palace, he has 29 rooms, you get a big palace of 26 rooms. He has some mystic powers, he can do so many mystic powers, you also get mystic powers. These are the opulences. The vibhutis of the Lord are shared with the devotee that practices Vaidhi Sadhana and goes to Bhava and praying, but he has some desire. It's a spiritual desire. It's like something like Kubja. Kubja didn't want to enjoy with any man of this world, but she wanted to enjoy with Krishna. So that's called Sadharani Rati. Sadharani means ordinary, commonplace attachment. But it was for the Lord. In that sense, it was transcendental. But it wasn't of the same nature. The gopis, love and attachment for the Lord is called Samartha. Samartha Rati. Means their complete samartha. Their only objective was to please the Lord, nothing for themselves. So that's completely extraordinary. Sadharani Rati means it's ordinary, commonplace, because it's a natural psychology that I want to enjoy with you. I want to scratch your back as long as you scratch my back. That's what's called Sadharani Rati. And then, but her object of Rati was God alone, not anyone else. She became lusty for Krishna and Balaram, not Kamsa or anyone of this world. And then the queens of Dwarka, they have a type of rati or attachment, which is called samanjasa, which means they want to please the Lord. He alone is their object of service. But they also, they're 90% interested in pleasing the Lord and 10%. They want something for themselves. Samanjasa, sama means there's some equality in the relationship. And there was no tinge of actual lust. Whereas Kubja was tinged with some material lust of this world. That's why although it's similar, that she wanted pleasure from only the Lord, but it was out of a lusty mood. So it's called Sadharani. It's commonplace. It's ordinary, like ordinary attraction. But the extraordinary transcendental aspect of it was that she was only, her only object was of attraction was Krishna. So the devotee, he doesn't want to have the opulence of the Lord. And then samipya means liberation of being close, nearby the Lord. And sarupya means possessing beauty equal to my beauty. So even if I offer any of these to the Lord, what to speak of their asking for them? My devotees never ask for any such salvation or anything else whatsoever. Their happiness is in serving me alone for my delight. So Vishwanath points out that when genuine devotees of the Lord refuse to accept the five forms of salvation or mukti, even if they are offered by the Lord himself, it establishes the fact that such a desire is absolutely absent in them. Like it's one thing to say, oh, I'm not interested. I like walking everywhere, and I just walk everywhere. I have no interest. We say like that. Now, if someone comes up and says, "Well, I have this new Porsche car. I want to give it to you." You say, "No, you keep it. I have no interest. I'd rather walk." So then, that's a real test of how much you're attached to walking, or how much you're free from the desire to travel in comfortable conveyances. As the Jyotishi will often tell you, yes, your chart indicates travel in comfortable conveyances. They sometimes say like that. I guess, from ancient standard, that means you'll ride on an elephant. You'll go from town to town on an elephant instead of walking on your feet. But now that elephant has become Singapore Airlines, Garuda Airlines, and it's become an eagle, Garuda. So The Lord actually, you can imagine, Lord come appears for the devotee and says, "Oh, I'm so pleased with your service. It's so wonderful. You're so dear to me. I want to offer you. I mean, you've been serving here in Harlem and going every day on Harinam in Harlem and preaching to the in Bro Loka, as they say. And I want to take Bro Loka, and I want to take you to Go Loka." And then you say, "No, my Lord, I am no interested to go to Goloka. I'm very satisfied here in Bro Loka." So then the Lord will be amazed. The devotees. So this is understood. That they don't accept mukti because they're only interested in pleasing the Lord. So this is the proof that there's absolutely no desire. The desire for liberation is absolutely absent in them. Now, we have to ask ourselves, are we absolutely free from any type of desire for salvation or emancipation? And we might say no. Then we can think, well, our devotion, our bhakti is not so deep, not so pure, not so transparent. There's a lot of mixture. Me mixture bhakti. Bhakti mixed with me. What's in it for me? So these messages may also ring a bell in our hearts also. So he goes on. But, on the other hand, if a devotee is found to accept any of the first four forms of mukti, which means Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, Sharsti, not Sayuja. It should be understood that the devotee accepts this mukti only for the purpose of giving happiness to the Lord Himself. So this is a point. That the Lord may come and offer mukti to the devotee, and he says, "No, I'm not interested. I want to stay here and serve you." And then the Lord might reply, "Yes, I know that, and I was only testing you by inviting you or offering mukti to you. But the point is, I will be very happy, and I would be very happy and very pleased. It would delight me and give me great pleasure if you would come with me, come back to me, come to the spiritual world and live with me and serve me there. I want to accept your service. I want to receive service from you in my place, in my abode. So this would make me happy." So then immediately the devotee abandons all this detachment for mukti and says, "Yes, if that's your delight, my Lord, your wish is my command, as they say. Then I'm at your disposal. Take me there. Bring me there. Immediately I'll go." So this is the transparency of the devotee, that his heart is only concerned with the pleasure. He's not attached to... It's a very interesting point. It's not exactly liberation, but sometimes a devotee's in a temple. He has a particular service. And it's service to the Lord. It requires surrender. It requires regularity, punctuality, and sense of duty, and so many qualities are required, especially surrender. And he's mustered all those necessary qualities, and he's doing that regular service. And then he even becomes attached to the service. And he may be on different levels and for different reasons, but he may be deriving some taste or happiness from that service, some ruchi abhas, or maybe some ruchi, genuine ruchi, if he's advanced in devotional surrender. And then the guru comes along and says, "Yes, no, that's very nice service you're doing. Now I want you to give this up and go go over here and start a new temple." Or do, and they say, Hare Krishna. So then that's, then you have to examine your motivation. Well, am I existing for the pleasure of my guru and Krishna? Or am I actually, I have become complacent in this service? And then we even give some arguments. "Oh, Guruji, I don't think anybody else can do this service. And I'm doing very well at this service, and everything has increased since I've been doing this service. And can you reconsider your idea about transferring me or relocating me?" And then we see that, well, are we attached to the pleasure of the Lord, or are we attached to our own pleasure? So we may be in the same thing in this world serving the Lord, And then the Lord comes and offers liberation, and we say, no, thank you, I'm happy to serve. Then he says, but it would make me happy if you would come and accept this liberation, and I'll accept your service here in Vaikuntha Dham or wherever. Then we say, I really like it. So then we can understand that we have some ulterior motive. It's kind of, I don't know if it's something like this connected. So now, verse 29. Again, this is from the fourth canto, chapter 9, verse 10. Yanir vritis tanu britam tava parapadma, dinad bhavaj janakata shavanena vasyat, sabrahmani sa mahimam yapi nat mabut, kim twantakashi bulitat patatam vimanat. And Dhruva Maharaj is speaking here, who was, of course, he's mentioned in chapter 7, or indirectly, verse 19 of Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvidam Bhajatimam Janasukriti Norjana. So Artarti, one who's desirous of wealth, was Dhruva Maharaj, known as the Karma Mishra Bhakta. So he mentioned this first, because he was meditating on the Lord's feet in Madhavan, in Vrindavan. And when the Lord gave Sakshat Darshan, Narayan, then Dhruva Maharaj said, my Lord, the transcendental bliss derived from meditating on your lotus feet or hearing about you from pure devotees is so unlimited that it is far beyond the stage of Brahmananda, wherein one thinks himself merged in the impersonal Brahman as one with the Supreme. Since Brahmananda is also defeated by the transcendental bliss of bhakti, then what to speak of the bliss, temporary bliss, of going to heavenly planets, which is ended by the separating sword of time? Because, as everyone knows, one may be elevated to heaven, but eventually falls down in due course of time. So Vishwanath is telling that the bliss which arises from meditating on, or hearing about, or serving Krishna's feet, or hearing about his devotees, can never be found in the bliss of Brahman, which is a form of your greatness, Swamahimani. Is that verse, that word is there in the purport, the verse. So since a person can attain bliss by being fixed on your personal form, what bliss can there be in Brahman? And then he quotes the Matsya speaking, 8th canto. You will be thoroughly advised and favored by me, and because of your inquiries, my greatness, known as the impersonal Brahman, will be manifest within your heart. Thus you will know everything about me. Vishnas tells, from this statement, one can understand that the greatness of the Lord is expressed as the impersonal Brahman. It is also understood that there is no bliss for those who fall from the heavenly planets, which are cut by time. And then he says, but the results of serving the Lord has another indirect fruit. What is the actual fruit of bhakti? It is only bhakti unto you. Bhakti, by being without desire, spontaneously bears its fruit as prema for the devotees. So oftentimes people ask, well, you're performing bhakti or devotion, serving the Lord, observing the different limbs of devotion, hearing, chanting, remembering, meditating, etc. Why are you doing that? What do you want to attain by that? Well, we're doing bhakti to get bhakti. We're serving the Lord to get more service. Now our service is mixed, it's somewhat contaminated with ambition or personal desire, and it's also interrupted. Our physical service is interrupted as soon as we get a little difficulty, sickness, and our mental service is always interrupted by vikshep and pratipati and all these things. It's very difficult to render mental service, although that's the most important aspect. It's one thing to be steady in the senses and bodily activities of devotional expression, but it's very difficult to be steady in the mental practices of devotion. And that's, of course, that's the second aspect, well, it can be. In Raghunuga Sadhana, it very much depends on the mind. I mean, Vaidhi Sadhana, with the desire to, if you practice Vaidhi Sadhana with an intense desire to attain Bhav or love for Krishna, then Krishna will arrange to fulfill that intensity of desire or that loving mood by arranging for one to follow the path of Raghunuga Sadhana. But many, they are satisfied with Vaidhi Sadhana, the rules and regulations, and they perfect Vaidhi and they attain Bhava by Vaidhi and Prema, but it can only take one to Vaikuntha. But in a level of Raghunuga Sadhana, then the mind has to come deeply into play, because one has to meditate on the nature of the Vrijvasis, their service, and the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan. Then one finds out how intermittent the activities of the mind are, and how monkey-like, crazy mind, pagomana, as our Gaura Govinda Swami would often use this term, pagomana, crazy mind, jumping here and there. If you want to know how steady you are, then try to meditate. It says that the yogi, his mind is like a candle flame in a windless place. If you have a room with no breeze or wind in it, and you light a match to a candle, then the flame burns very steady and solidly. A little wind comes, it dances here and there. But the yogi, his mind may be fixed. So the bhakti yogi, when you try to actually fix the mind on the Lord's pastimes, or even his form, steadily meditate on his form, Rup Dhyan, then you see how much wind comes in the room of your mind. How much the candle flame goes here. It's called Vikshep distraction. There's five different features of the mind's inability to focus. So therefore the purification is required, Chaito Dharpana Marjanam. We try to meditate, slow and steady, but we try, but at the same time we're diligently, our meditation is backed by the sadhana of Nam sadhana. So Nam sadhana is combined with meditation, because Nam gives the purity to make the mind steady. Of course, ultimately the name reveals everything. But without Nam, the ordinary mind of the conditioned soul is extremely chanchala. Chanchala himana Krishna, pramati balavan. Arjuna tells Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, the mind is like the wind. It's chanchala, it's very unsteady. It's as difficult to control the mind as it is to control the wind. Like now this wind is blowing, can we just grab it and stop it? Oh, hey, stop you, stop blowing. It's very hard to hold on to the wind. So the mind is like the wind. How can you grab it? How can you stop it? So only Krishna can grab it. Only Krishna can stop it. Whenever there's a fire, there's always wind. If it's a forest fire, there's always a lot of wind. Because fire exists by drinking air. So if there's no air, the fire goes out. You see the blacksmith, when he has his iron foundry, or he's trying to heat up some iron, and he's always has his assistant with the bellows, blacksmith's bellows. He's forcing air into the fire to increase the intensity of the fire so he can melt the iron, horseshoes and various iron implements called bellows. Forcing air, so lots of air is required for a fire. If you stop the airflow, you stop the fire. Fire doesn't burn in a vacuum. So therefore, when there was a forest fire in Vrindavan, in Dhavanala Kund, there was a big forest fire. There was so much wind blowing, so much fire, so much wind. And that fire was just raging. Then Krishna told his boys, he said, close your eyes. And then he swallowed the forest fire and put it in his belly. So this raging, this wind of the mind, this, so much wind was there in that forest fire, and Krishna swallowed it all. And everything became very quiet, everything became very tranquil and very peaceful. And then the coward boys didn't feel any disturbance or any threat of their lives. And the cows the cows ceased from crying, because the cows and the boys were surrounded on all sides by the forest fire. There's Munjitavi fire, and also Dhavanala. There was two different times of forest fire. One was reeds and one was the forest. Munjitavi is a type of reed. And both times Krishna swallowed the fires. So that wind, all that wind, Krishna can swallow. So all the vikshep and all the distraction, all the wind that's blowing in the mind, chanchala himana Krishna, that the trying to control the mind is like trying to control the wind. So Krishna, he can control those winds. He can swallow all those winds in his mouth. In the same way, all the distractions in the mind, the winds of distraction, which keep us from fixing our mind on Krishna's nam, rup, gun, and lila, they can be controlled by Krishna. Krishna can control them. And that's where prayer comes in. Whenever you see the acharyas advising us, they advise us in nam. They say nam prarthana and dhyan. That we chant the holy name and then we offer prarthana, prayers. Prayers to the acharyas, prayers to the nam prabhu and prayers to Krishna. Oh, my mind is so crazy. Oh, Gopinath. And I'm trying to meditate on your leelas with the gopis, but my mind is crazy. And so we're chanting nam to become purified, then we're praying to get assistance. We're offering prayers to get assistance and invoke help from above, from the parampara and from Krishna himself. And then we're endeavoring to meditate. We're trying to meditate. So our endeavor, joined with the mercy of the Lord and his associates, and combined with the purity, foundational purity created by chanting the holy name, will bring success in our endeavors to meditate on Krishna's leelas, on Krishna's form and qualities. This is the point. And then, so the result of bhakti is bhakti. Now the next verse in this series up to verse 54, it's from the fourth canto, chapter 20, verse 24. Nakamaye nata tadapya ham kuchin nayatra yushmach charam bujasava mahattamantar ridiyan mukachito vidatsakarna yutam esha me vara. Prithu is speaking. My dear Lord, so all these different devotees are speaking to the Lord. I do not wish to have the benediction emerging into your existence. A benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. I want the benediction of at least 1 million ears. For thus I will be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouths of your pure devotees. So that's quite a few ears. 1 million years. It's interesting when you think about, there's a verse from the Mangalacharan of Vidugdha Madhav, the play about Krishna and Vrindavan with all the gopis called Vidugdha Madhav by Srila Rupa Goswami. He has a very famous verse there, Tundatavi, whatever. It's a long verse, but a very famous verse where he's saying, oh my Lord, there is so much nectar in these two syllables, Krishna. Krishna. Of course, this is a prayer by Radharani, actually, in the play. Actually, it's one of the lines from the play, Vidugdha Madhav. And Radharani is speaking to Lalita Sakhi. She's saying, oh my Sakhi, there's so much nectar in these two words, Krishna, these two syllables, Matra, Krishna, that I wish I had millions of ears to drink the nectar. I wish I had millions of tongues to vibrate these holy syllables, Krishna. Then I could, if I had millions of tongues and millions of ears, then I could somewhat relish a few drops of the unlimited ocean of nectar that's condensed within these two syllables, Krishna. Of course, we don't have the same experience. We have two ears, and when we chant Hare Krishna, then those two ears hear that sound, and somehow they interpret that sound of that name Krishna to be some form of lullaby. And we hear that lullaby, then we go to sleep. We go bye bye, lullaby, bye bye. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Because there's so much ignorance in our being. But Radharani, of course, has a different experience when she chants Krishna. And Mahaprabhu was going mad traveling through South India going mad, simply running behind those two syllables. He was running all over South India chasing two syllables, Krishna. Running all over South India chasing two syllables, pursuing two syllables. Where is this sweetness? Where is this sweetness taking me? Where is the form of this holy name? Where is my beloved? Where is my Priyatam? Krishna, 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 hey. He's Keshava, he's Raghava, he's a protector. He engages in, and once I remember him, he was Krishna Keshava. That Krishna was brushing my hair in Sringharbhat. That Krishna was putting flowers in my hair in the Ashokvan in Kusum Sarovara. And that Krishna protected me from my relatives. And that Krishna protected me from the onslaughts of Cupid. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. Rama Raghava means the Lord of erotic sports. Rama Raghava, Rakshamam. He protected me from the arrows of Cupid. When I was being impaled by the arrows of Cupid, that Krishna came and played his murali, and he captured my heart, and he danced with me on the banks of the Yamuna. Where is that Krishna? Krishna, 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 hey. This is Radhabhav, the mood of separation. So it's not that when Lord Chaitanya was traveling through South India, he was chanting the name of Ramachandra. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava. This is not the meaning of Rama Raghava. Because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the mood of Radharani, feeling the intense pang of separation of Radharani, searching for Krishna, looking for Krishna. So wandering all over South India, chasing these two syllables, Krishna, Krishna. And we chant these two syllables and Hare Krishna. So, there's some difference. The Jiva Goswami's commentary we will hear tomorrow.